Welcome to the podcast at the end of the universe. Hi, it's me, Katie Rex.
Hi, it's me, Mitch Miller.
And today we want to talk... Oh, I remembered the important thing I was going to tell
you. Oh, okay, we can stop for now.
It's actually... Nope, it's not important, so we're just going to keep going, because it'll come up later. Today we're going to talk about Jonathan Hickman, which was not actually an intentional thematic choice.
And not something I picked up on until last night.
We just... Well, so I kind of did it intentionally, because once we were on Secret, because we wanted to talk about Secret, and we wanted to talk about God is Dead, and then I was like, hey, that's a lot of Hickman. You know what I liked was the nightly news.
Which?
So that's how I picked the third one.
And I love that you picked that one, but there were so many others, too. Like, when I finally realized we were redoing Hickman, I looked up all his other stuff.
And it's Manhattan Projects, East of West, Pax Romana.
I was going to say Pax Romana, A Red Mass for Mars, and there were Transhuman were the three that I immediately saw.
He has an impressive bibliography.
He really does.
Yeah. So. Oh, did you know that he was born in South Carolina?
Did not. Did he know that I lived there for 10 years?
I doubt he knows anything at all about you.
Hmm. Well, he knows now, if he listens to this, that I was lived there for 10 years. What part of South Carolina was he from?
I don't know. How would I know that? I have what Wikipedia told me. I'm sorry.
I'm assuming Wikipedia had that.
That's what Wikipedia said. Anyway, if that's accurate, he's from South Carolina, and that's exciting.
It is.
Okay. So, we're going to talk about Jonathan Hickman today, and we covered which three books we're going to talk about.
He did Pop Gun Volume 1, 2. What?
Well, and he did some Marvel books. He did Fantastic Four and the Avengers.
Oh, he did Secret Warriors? Man, I love that.
Yeah. Okay.
I love that storyline.
I'm really glad that you're just looking this up while we're recording. Good job. So I was hoping that we could talk about Secret first.
Okay.
For those of you who are not familiar with Secret, I don't know why you're listening to the show, because we're totally going to spoil it for you. But the premise of Secret is... So let me start again. I'm not doing this articulately. And you can totally edit that out, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to, are you?
I might.
Okay. So the premise is that it's sort of a classic gritty intrigue spy story with like an alternate history, but without changing our present universe. If that makes sense.
No, but kind of.
Okay, so you know what an alternate history is, yeah?
Yes.
Well, so normally when one reads an alternate history narrative, it changes the universe in which we now live. And the way that this historical change works, it's a secret. And so having kept the secret until now, it doesn't change the world.
I didn't even get that. Like, okay. from reading it, I didn't get that. I didn't even think of it as an alternate universe or alternate past. I pretty much just saw it as something
because
that they've never...
Because you thought that... In the real-life world, the CIA and the KGB collaborated to embezzle money?
Actually, things like this have happened, and it wasn't the KGB and the CIA. It was just members of that section.
Right. You're right. It wasn't officially sanctioned.
So, I mean, I felt like this could have just been something that was in our world.
It could have. And that's kind of what I'm saying, too, is that it doesn't change our world by putting something that is hypothetically fictional in our past.
There we go. We have to have that thing like at the end of a movie where names and things happening are completely by coincidence.
Right. I don't think we have to. I think that that would be the author's job.
Mm.
And I have no idea if he did that.
Yeah.
I don't see it anywhere.
Figure we could just help him out a little bit.
So we've covered the premise is that the CIA and the KGB... or members of those two factions embezzled some money and squirreled it away like squirrels. Squirreled it away like squirrels.
Like Rocky and Bullwinkle?
Only one of them's a squirrel.
Oh, I know.
And then all those years later, we've got our character, Miles Stedman, who tries to take it all for himself. And that sort of leads to a bunch of people getting killed. And that's our story, yeah?
Yes. But
I would say that's the story in a really too long nutshell.
Okay, can I try?
Go for it.
Cold War spies steal tons of money. One of them tries to take all the money for himself, pisses people off, his friends start dying. When someone else's friend dies, that person tries to figure out what it's all about and calls or looks for revenge.
Okay, so you're more efficient at this than I am. Good job.
But we did. We missed that part, though. This something starts this whole comic series off.
Okay.
And that is?
You were the one nutshelling right now.
Well, it's the death of... God, I can't remember his name right now.
Thomas?
Yes. Yeah, the death of Thomas. And that puts this whole thing into action.
Yep. So we have our catalyst.
Yes.
And this is a chapter. These six issues that we're focusing on today are a chapter, which is why they will be collected into a trade. So hypothetically, at the end of the sixth one, the narrative arc is somewhat concluded.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't feel a ton of resolution about it. Do you?
I felt like it was... I didn't feel anything was resolved. I felt like it was setting it up for the next story.
Right. So the reason I wanted to talk about Secret first is because I think it's a really good example of a thing that Hickman does, which is he makes you pay attention.
Yes.
I feel like in a lot of other things that you read, comics or otherwise, you can skip a page and generally use context to pick up whatever you missed. You can go to the bathroom while you're watching TV, and when you come back, you can pick up what has happened in those 2 minutes. But with Hickman, if you miss anything at all, and particularly in Secret, you're just kind of fucked.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also why it was so helpful in the fifth issue when they laid it all out on the table. Like, there was a literal table and said, this is what we know.
I gotta put out there, my biggest disappointment in this story, though, was the death of the hacker.
Yeah, yeah. Why doesn't he have a name?
He does. It was like Luong.
His name is Mr. Wan. And it's pretty weird that he does not have a first name. He just has the Mr.
No, I thought he did have a whole
everybody
name.
Else has full names. I don't remember seeing it. Maybe it was there.
Well, it's probably because he planned on killing him.
Probably. I don't know.
Why put all that effort?
It's an interesting character choice.
But he just seemed like he had a lot of potential as a character to go somewhere.
Now, you said, why put all that effort into learning someone's name if you're going to kill them? And I actually think that the reason to not learn someone's name if you're going to kill them is so that it's not personal. It's kind of like how people can't name their farm animals if they're going to slaughter them.
Yes.
It's not a matter of effort. It's a matter of being close to something.
That's true. That actually makes a lot of sense. But yeah, no, I was sad because I felt like there was so much more he could have done. He just gets
I really liked him too.
Killed in an elevator.
Yeah. And I totally didn't see it coming either.
No. No. That guy got there really fast.
So if we could talk a little bit about the art style here.
Oh, please. Yes, go ahead. I have questions.
Okay. So the artist, Bodenheim. Do we know anything about him? I don't know a ton about Ryan Bodenheim, but
I'm not even going to try and find out.
I like it.
I already got in trouble for researching during the podcast.
Well, maybe you should do your research before the podcast. Okay, well, let's start with your questions. What are your questions?
Well, I want to know... I noticed that most of it's black and white, but he's always got this yellow and red shading for...
Yeah, that's a really interesting stylistic choice. And for a while, I thought that red meant KGB, but I don't think that's accurate.
No, I always thought it was going to be something violent was supposed to be happening, because he's got, like, the dangerous people
right.
highlighted in red, well, or the dangerous weapon or something like that, but then there's parts where...
Well, and red traditionally cues violence, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But then he started using the yellow a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's where I started getting thrown off.
Yeah, I don't actually have any solutions to how we ought to look at the color. I just have a lot of comments.
Yeah, but you know, yeah, there is a reason for the colors, though.
Absolutely. It's very intentional. One of my favorite things, I'm looking at issue 3 here, and as you turn the pages, the way that the pages are done is in sort of a monochrome with a lot of shading, mm-hmm. and that monochrome changes from page to page in a way that is very, very smooth. So you don't hardly even notice when you go from here I've got yellow and orange and now I'm in green, and after green I have gray. It's a very seamless but also sort of jarring way of experiencing the world. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then so again, I don't have any answers. I think it's an interesting thing to think about, and I think people can comment on our posts, and if somebody has theories about why it was why the coloring was the way it was, that would be great.
Please, yes, everybody.
And I also want to note that the colors were done by Michael Garland, so I assume that's a collaboration between Garland and Bodenheim, the artist. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for having talked about the colors and not naming the colorist first. Well, because, you know.
Oh, completely understandable.
All right. Well, so, thank you, Michael Garland, for giving us something to think about.
Yes. Also, Hickman, why did you stop putting quotes in the beginning of the stories?
Yeah. He did, didn't he?
He did. Like, the first two had quotes, and then everything else is just like, well, I'm done.
Huh. I didn't notice that that stopped.
I have a thing for quotes.
All right. That's cute. So the other thing I want to talk about artistically is in issue 5, mm-hmm. and actually in the What We Know scene, the gutters look like broken glass.
Mm, yes.
And that continues for pages after that. It's very fragmented, and it's not even just that there are these weird gutters separating the scenes, but the drawings are offset in such a way that they appear to be the way you would look in a fragmented mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really an interesting choice, and I wonder if that means that this is when everything breaks.
Hmm. Huh.
Well, I think they did some really amazing things with gutters in issue 5.
I also like that the fact that the guy's chin has a 5 on it the whole time.
Yep.
Which caught me off guard a lot.
Yeah.
But you're right. Sorry, that just popped out at me. But
no, you're good.
You're right. I think it does. Like, everything is starting to fall apart around everybody's ears. Because this is when people start dying, and this is when they start finding out who's doing wrong stuff, and...
Right, and I really like the way that the art matches the narrative, mm-hmm. where in the narrative everything's breaking and we've got a broken image. I feel like I might be being redundant, though, at this point.
Meh.
I just really like this, and so I'm going to keep repeating how much I like it so that you all know how much I like it.
And there you go.
Yeah. Was there anything else? Oh, I wanted to talk about... the family flashback.
Oh, with his dad?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was messed up.
So I have this theory, and I'll try and talk about it throughout the episode.
That they're going to become involved with the Russians later on because his family's Russian?
Well, yes, that's a theory. But the one that I'm talking about specifically, my theory of the moment, is that the way that Jonathan Hickman narratives work... are they all have sort of a moral, but the moral is never about what is ethically right. So in this, so far, the moral that I'm predicting is don't get caught.
I was going to say, I think that's all his things. 'Cause
well, no, I, I have some ideas on what the other morals are.
I'm pretty sure the moral of Nightly News is don't get caught, because we find out who that guy is at the end of that one.
No, pretty sure that the moral of Nightly News is there is no such thing as a good guy.
That, but also don't get caught, because look at Senator Rector.
Okay. I'm sticking to my opinion. But we're going to fight about Nightly News when we talk about Nightly News. Right now we're talking about Secret. the other thing about the... Oh, no, we were going to talk about the family flashback.
Yes.
Will you talk about that a little bit?
Well, no, I mean, I don't think there's much more to say. It sets it up for the whole don't get caught thing. It just shows that, yeah, it puts the two brothers together, puts them in a situation where they owe allegiance to each other and loyalty.
And it's incredibly brutal.
I think there's going to be more to it, though. Because of the loyalty that brothers feel for each other. Like, one does not seem to be better than the other. He's not holding anything over him. So at one...
You don't think that Grant's the good guy and Marcus is the chaotic neutral?
I don't think either one's good or bad. I mean, again, we're talking about that whole moral gray area. But what I'm saying is, the older brother, the one that took the finger off, he's not holding it over his brother at all. Like, they're equals. One's not better than the other.
Yeah.
So something happened with the little brother that put him on the same footing as his older brother. Like, to make them equals.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to more of the family background. Because I think that's really fascinating.
Yes, especially with the family being Russians and them having turned against the KGB. Because it seems like the family was raised in the KGB. Or with the knowledge of them. And said they chose to become CIA, so...
Yeah, I'm really interested to see where that goes, because, I don't know, I think the other thing that I will say about stories by Hickman that I've finished is there are 6 or 7 times when you think you know what's going on, and every time you're going to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, we can hypothesize all we want, and we're probably wrong.
Most definitely.
All right, well, I think that's actually a really good time if you want to take a musical break.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to talk about the Black Lips, so...
Rather kick the legs out of the chair and watch it fall.
And that was Waiting from The Black Lips.
Thank you. Next, we are going to talk about God is Dead.
Yes.
Which I absolutely loved. But real quick before we do, and I'm doing this specifically to fuck with you, Mitch, because I know you're really excited to talk about God is Dead. So I'm going to delay it. Basically, so we have a contest this month, and the contest is to win this reasonably cool Coffin Hill poster. It's if you want
pretty
it.
Pretty awesome.
It is really awesome. I'm downplaying it because I kind of want to keep it. So we'll see. No, if you want to win our Coffin Hill poster, what you have to do is you need to tweet at me, and that's at EOTU Comics, End of the Universe Comics. And what you need to tweet is, Hulk Hogan has pickles for nipples. Again, that's Hulk Hogan has pickles for nipples. And the first person to tweet that at me will get a free Coffin Hill poster.
Just you wait for the Hulkamania to come down on you for saying things really, like that.
You don't have to, like, I don't know if he has a Twitter account. You don't have to at him. He doesn't need to know about
come this. On, brother. Just let him know that Hulk Hogan has pickles for nipples.
I would prefer that Hulk Hogan not beat me up. So if you can manage to tweet at me without getting me beat up, that would be great.
You tell the Hulk Hogan. Tell him that Hulkamania can come down and beat me anytime.
Hey, did you want to talk about God is Dead now?
Hey, you got me on wrestling. I'm sorry.
I know. All right, let's talk about it, though.
Okay.
And you're super excited, so I'll let you start off.
I just love... Well, first off, I mean, the title itself is just great. That's the reason I got it. Not because I'd heard anything about it, not because Hickman was the writer, but because of the title.
What about the title appeal to you? Was that because you're like a Nietzsche fan or a Time magazine fan? Or what's the deal?
No, it's just that it's something so blatantly in your face in an industry, not just comics, but like in media itself, where people are trying to play nice, that to see something like God is Dead just makes you go, what? This looks interesting all of a sudden.
I actually, I assumed that it was a nod to the 1966 cover of Time magazine from the April issue. It's one of their more famous and controversial covers.
Oh, yeah.
That said, God is Dead, and that was the cover.
I think I have a poster of that somewhere.
Well, it's a very famous...
But you've got...
Famous... pop culture thing.
But you've got to admit, since then, a lot of the rhetoric for media is back to...
Oh, absolutely.
We either...
And so I looked it up today, God is Dead as a historical phrase, because I knew that there was a lot of precedent. Mm-hmm. And God is Dead is a phrase that's found in several writings by Nietzsche. It's in a theological movement. There are like three or four different theological movements that are based on the death of God and what that means.
I mean, that's a whole other thing we could do.
Okay. I like to think about things.
Oh,
sorry.
No, I know. But I'm just saying that's opened up a whole other can of worms.
That might be the point for me. Anyway, so what is God is Dead about?
God is Dead is about all the non-dead gods that we thought were dead coming back and proving to the world that they are here and they are pissed and we are theirs.
So when you say that they're gods that we thought were dead, that is namely gods that are no longer worshipped.
Well, it's every god.
Well, I didn't see the Christian god.
Ooh.
Doesn't mean he's not going to come in, but...
Well then, let's not talk about issue 7.
I haven't... I read the first 6. Okay. So that's going to be cool. I'm excited.
But I mean, they even do, like... I'm going to do a little spoiler. It's not a big one with that. But they start bringing in random gods from other pantheons in issue 7 that aren't aligned with anybody.
All right.
And then even in the original issues, they don't talk about any of the other gods. They make one mention where they're like, oh, well, the Greeks, the Egyptians, the Norse, the Mayans and the Hindu gods are here, but what about the Chinese gods? And then a Chinese dragon shows up. So they're out there. They just haven't made their play yet.
Okay. So how do you feel about this series in relation to the concept of hubris?
hadn't thought of that.
Okay. So hubris in Greek literature means pridefulness. And for a really long time, scholars assumed that that meant a pridefulness that was sacrilegious, because you were proud in a way that made you think that you were better than gods. And I think that's really germane to this series because of the way that pride and superiority play into... Because the other thing about hubris is that hubris is supposed to get you killed.
Right. Pride cometh before the fall.
Right. So thinking you're better than gods and dying for it, very germane to this particular series.
It does. I mean, it shows... I mean, the best idea for that one, it shows up the most with that colonel, the army guy. Mm-hmm. That he gets all the codes. It's like, well, I'm going to blow everybody up. Fuck these gods. And then he gets killed by his own men.
What? If it's... Right. Oh, I liked that scene. That was cool. If it's not too bizarre to say so or sacrilegious, I also think that the gods were exhibiting hubris. Well, that's, and that's when...
That's what I was going to bring up next, because the whole scientists were there looking to kill him. And since the gods think they're better and impervious when they make... human gods.
I was thinking about the scene where Anubis comes out of nowhere.
Is that how you say it?
I don't know.
Oh, I was...
I'm gonna make a disclaimer here. I'm really sorry. I grew up with anglicized names. They're the ones that are most familiar to me. I don't want to fuck up any other names, and I'm sorry if I do.
Oh, no, I just thought it was Anubis. I could be completely wrong.
So could I.
I like Anubis.
Who knows? We'll look that up. That was probably... We should have probably done that ahead of time. So I think, though, that it's really interesting, the concept that when one thinks one is immortal or superior or perfect, that's when you get killed.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the physicality of the way that the gods were murdering each other. So when humans, us puny mortals, were attacking the gods, we used our technologies, planes and bombs and guns and all that shit. But when the gods fought one another, it was really brutal, really one-on-one. And I think the concept of a god which doesn't have a physical presence murdering with such physicality is a really interesting juxtaposition.
Yes.
Thanks.
I just like the fact that rather than them killing each other with bolts of lightning, they actually had to get down and dirty and fight each other hand to hand.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is that you said it, got down and dirty. They're gods. They're supposed to be elevated. They're supposed to be above all that shit.
When? Since when?
No, I that's what I'm saying.
But
is that the point
but never.
That's being made?
It's great because, I mean, for me, it's great because I love mythology, and it's just pointing out that these people were never better than us. They have to do the same things we do to fight each other. I mean, they were all womanizing and terrorizing their own people and stuff like that, so they're no better than us. They're just larger.
Right. I liked the press conference at the beginning. Not press conference. Oh, you know what would be funny is if it was called a summit.
You mean...
Get it? Get it?
Oh.
Yeah, I'm super funny.
In case people haven't read it, the reason it's funny is because it was on Mount Olympus.
It was funny.
No, it was funny. But you gotta set it up.
Probably I should have done that. Well,
but they do. They get it together and they decide, hey, we get these areas with America and what, Western Europe being pretty much the safe ones at the moment. And then South America goes to the Mayans. Africa goes to the Egyptians. Hindus get India, subcontinent, and everything to the west. Or no, to the east. The Norse get Scandinavia and the Greeks get Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And then they become not happy.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting concept, having gods war in as petty a way as our own ridiculous human governments.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, I have kind of a throwaway thing, two throwaway things to talk about that are not terribly important. One is that I think it's really interesting that Thor is blonde, because that's our modern conception of Thor in, like, the movies and the comics. But I recently read that the original Thor in Norse mythology had red hair. Yeah.
Dirty ginger.
So it makes me wonder if these gods are somehow affected by human conception of them.
You mean kind of like the American gods idea from Neil Gaiman?
Yeah, I was getting a lot of thoughts from that book in this series, because I think that they share some interesting similarities on the premises.
Mm-hmm.
Although, of course, they're also very different in a lot of ways. The physicality of murder being one of them.
Right.
Right.
Well.
Oh, and the... sorry.
Well, no, I mean, they killed each other in that as well. Hand to hand and suicide.
Right? I felt like it was less brutal.
Less brutal, yes.
Okay. And the other thing that I wanted to bring up that is also not like a super important point, but that I really liked, was the Prophet Bernard.
Mm.
Because he starts out being a news anchor. And I don't know if you noticed, but the name of the news station, and he says, "This is the nightly news,"
mm-hmm.
which we can reference when we talk about our next book. He says, "This is the nightly news, and the news station is called UBS. So,
universal bullshit.
I think that, right, I'm pretty sure that that was not even a subtle message.
Well, I love the time switch to it also. I love that mm-hmm. They don't do that 6 months later thing.
Right.
He starts, well, here's a long summer, and then immediately goes winter solstice. And he's now a high priestess, or a high priest.
Yep. Yeah, I think his character is really interesting. And I think that that actually is a really good way to segue into our next book, which will be The Nightly News. Mm-hmm. But first, let's take a musical break.
Okay. Well, up next, we have The Eagles, not your normal ones. It's E-A-G-U-L-L-S, and the song...
Eagles.
Eagles, and the song Nerve Endings. So, here we go.
We'll be right back.
And that was Nerve Endings from the Eagles.
All right, now this is the part that I know you're really excited about, and I know I said that last time.
I was gonna say, at what point haven't I been excited in this episode?
I know, it's really... I tried to put them in ascending order of how excited I am about them, which was a really difficult thing to choose because they're all really great.
Especially since and Mitch apparently has no ascending order.
Right. I also would like everybody to appreciate my self-restraint. I could have made this episode much longer because I'm really enjoying the Manhattan Projects in East of West right now. And I have no idea how he manages to have this many ongoing series at the same time.
That are all deliciously good.
Right. I think maybe he just doesn't have to sleep or eat.
That is a possibility.
Maybe he's on a lot of, like, Ritalin.
Yes. Let's go with that one. That's legal.
Okay. Jonathan Hickman, I don't know you, and I'm saying that you're on drugs, and I'm sorry. I'm sure you're not, and that I'm just a horrible person.
Well, depending on what part of South Carolina he's from.
Fair enough. All right, let's talk about the nightly news, though.
Do it. Start it.
All right, so I wrote a little nutshell, which is a thing that a professor of mine made me do once upon a time, and now I got in the habit. And what I said was that nightly news is about brainwashing a populace into forced polarity. That's the thematic point of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that Hickman uses this vehicle to do so is by talking about the media influence on our society. You want to say something?
Nope, keep talking.
Oh, okay, thanks. So right at the beginning, and I think this is one of my favorite beginnings to a comic ever, and you can tell me how fucked up you think that makes me. Right at the very beginning, just a couple of pages in, somebody gets shot in the head. And I think that's great. Because I think that's kind of what this book is trying to do to you. Is
shoot you in the head?
Yep. You're sitting down, you think you're gonna be reading a comic book, and you know what comic books are like. And Jonathan Hickman shoots you in the head and says, hey, pay close attention. Remember how I said that during Secret, when we were talking about Secret? Yeah, because that's a thing that Hickman does. So he makes you pay attention. He's like, you know how you thought there was going to be exposition at the beginning, and then there kind of was, and all of a sudden somebody's fucking dead? You're like, what?
Oh, I'm loving this. Keep going. And not in a bad way. No, I'm really liking this.
Okay.
I'm enjoying listening to you.
Oh, that's so sweet. So we just got shot in the head. And then we're introduced to the concept of two polar opposites, right? We've got your media, and your media controls what you hear about, what you learn about. And generally, the biases of the media affect the biases of the populace that media is consumed by. And so that will affect the way that, for instance, they vote in order to make their governments exist. And then their governments, in turn, have influence over the media. So it's this really masturbatory circle that is pointed out right at the very beginning as being fucked up and stupid and wrong. However, we are also introduced to the concept that there is a faction that opposes said media, and they are this really nice brotherhood of disenfranchised people who have been fucked up by the news.
Nice.
I think you're going to say something. What are you going to say?
Oh, nothing. I'm just nice.
Okay. And they've got all these rules, and it seems very religious.
No, now I want you to tell me, nice? Nice brotherhood?
Well, I think at the beginning we're meant to think of them as the good guys.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, obviously, what I said earlier was that every time you think something, you're wrong. So, although they're set up as the good guys, because obviously when there are bad guys, the people opposing the bad guys must be the good guys. So even though they're set up as good guys, we learn throughout that they've got all these very crazy rules about what you can eat, what you can do, when you can leave, who you can speak to, how much sex you can have.
None.
Well, for the hand, there's none.
And we're assuming that's just for everybody as well. Okay. I mean, they're all, I'm just assuming that, but they're all put in the same way. They all have to eat, they can't eat or anything like that.
Right. It's very brainwashy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting that these two opposing factions are equally brainwashed. Which is where Hickman's playing with Gray again.
Right. But it gets interesting because are they really brainwashed?
I think that quite a few of them were. I don't think that you can say that about every one of them.
Right. But what about the hand?
Actually, so I want to talk about his title. Can I talk about his title for a sec?
Yeah.
So you read V for Vendetta, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of this, the hand and the voice thing, was reminding me a lot of the way that V for Vendetta had the government set up as a person.
Aha, now I get why the text message.
Yep. Yeah, that's why I sent it to you. You're welcome. So, and I feel like the other thing that V did was make this concept of, you think there's the good guy, but guess what? Everything is morally ambiguous and nobody is good or perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So in a lot of ways, this echoes that. But in a lot of ways, it also doesn't. And again, one of those ways is the brutality. Thank you, Jonathan Hickman, for always giving us more brutality than the other guys, because that's what I like. That's not sarcasm. That's actually what I like.
It is.
Thanks. I'm glad you reassured our listeners that I'm not lying about what I like.
She's very violent, ladies and gentlemen. Later after the show, she's going to beat me.
If you're lucky. No, edit that out. That was not a thing I meant to say or should ever say. Gross.
Too late.
No. Should not have said that. Nope. Edit it out, please. Okay. Anyway. The other thing that I thought was really cool. I need to stop saying the other thing. I'm falling into verbal patterns that are not good. You're going to have to edit a ton at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry about it.
So either way, we promised a fight.
Okay, yeah. So, we were talking about how it was similar to V and how it was dissimilar to V. So, I've pointed out some similarities. Will you help us point out some dissimilarities?
Yeah, kids, will you? There's Blue's Clues.
I was talking to you, not the children in our audience.
Oh, man.
I really hope children don't listen to this. Moms and dads, if you're letting your children listen to our podcast...
You should tell them to listen more. Let them to make their own decisions based on what they hear. Why tell the kids...
You're the parent.
Why tell
the
kids what they can and can't hear? I mean, that's even in the damn book. The whole education thing and how education...
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that part about elementary schools. Emily Dickinson Elementary, actually.
Says the woman who's telling them not to let their kids hear stuff that's not...
What are you going to do?
...regimented.
What are you going to do?
I'm doing nothing. I'm just saying.
Okay. So do you want to talk about the elementary school? Emily Dickinson Elementary?
Okay. I feel like you have some connection you want to make.
Actually, did you read the notes in the back?
No, I didn't manage to read those.
I think it's really interesting that there are all of these notes created in the back of my volume anyway. I'm not sure that all printings had these. And one of the things that it says is that the Emily Dickinson Elementary was chosen completely at random and was not meant... Oh, there is no particular bone to pick is actually what is specifically said. I love that there are these annotations and citations at the end, like this is a research paper. Because if this is a research paper, it's such a fuck you.
Which I feel like it might be anyway.
Right, right.
But, no, just the whole school thing, I mean, it's what everybody feels, you know, and finally someone got something where people will buy it that he can actually, they'll read about how he feels about it.
Yeah.
But the whole thing where they're just indoctrinated into certain ways to say and believe certain things because that's what they're told to, and that's what the government has allowed us to teach the children, and that it's to keep them from questioning anything.
Now, on the other hand, because it's all gray and nothing is black and white, it is really important to have things like teaching and education and critical consciousness and questions and...
But they're fed the same line every year, even when stuff's incorrect.
I feel like you're missing the point that I'm making right now.
Really? Because Columbus, we're continued to be told that he's a hero and found America when the guy was pretty much a slaver.
Really not.
Yes.
Somebody who was interning in an elementary school, I can tell you that a ton of us are like, hey, fuck that. That's not a thing anymore.
A ton of you? Are you a teachers that are sanctioned by the school that continue to work there and teach kids against it?
Yeah.
Really? Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Do you know a ton about elementary education?
Try not to.
Okay. Anyway, so the point that I'm making is that this, as with the other things in the book, is that, yes, it's fucked up the way we do it now, but that doesn't mean that being opposed to it is the only option.
Do tell.
Because
let's get all Fox News and CNN on this. Do tell.
What?
How can we change it?
I don't think you're hearing me or something.
Probably not.
What I'm saying is that there are gray areas constantly. There's not a good, there's not a bad. Shit's fucked up. We try and make it not fucked up, and generally we don't really succeed. And saying that education is bad is not accurate, and saying that education is good, at least the way that we have it right now, is not accurate. And taking one side over another is not fair or reasonable or, I guess, accurate? I don't know if taking sides can be an accurate thing, but you know what I mean, right?
I hear what you're saying.
Okay. Well, and as we talk about the gray area, I want to draw your attention to the warnings at the beginning. In the bottom right-hand corner of every chapter.
I like how they get progressively darker.
Yeah, exactly. It starts with, note, all violence depicted in this book should not be considered a reflection of the author. I give to charities, play with children, and love cooking. And it progresses because at the beginning, it sounds like this author thinks he's a pretty good guy. And at some point, the text becomes, note, all violence depicted in this book should not be considered a reflection of the author. I have had my record expunged, fear honesty, and cheat at poker. And that continues to become more morally ambiguous and unreliable as the concept of right and wrong also unravels. It echoes that in a way that is really beautiful. Do you want to talk about the infographics?
No.
I bet you have things to say about the infographics.
No. I have nothing to say about the infographics. I feel like they're just going to get me in trouble.
Excuse you?
I feel like they're just going to get me in trouble.
No, not at all. You want to talk about the notes before the infographics? That's a really interesting component.
The ones that tell you to go to the next page if you don't care.
Right.
Yes, I do like those. Because
if you're like me and only care about your own personal entertainment, keep reading on the next page.
Well, I like just that it pokes fun at people who like to say that they feel a certain way, but when given a different place to look at, they'll go there instead.
Do you think also maybe the note is going to make you read the infographic?
That's probably what he intended.
Now that he's told me that I am a shallow, bad person for not reading the infographic, I better read the infographic.
And I think also, I mean, I saw infographics and immediately wanted to read it, which I think is another thing that's wrong with everybody that does the media. Like, we're conditioned to believe that all the information we could ever need comes from an infographic, so we immediately go to it.
Yeah, I suppose, especially in print media.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice that there are neat little charts and lines that make up our world and tie it together perfectly in a way that makes sense and is reasonable.
Yes, and it does the research for us so that we don't have to do it ourselves.
Right.
So
anyway, we could get really angry and jaded and disenfranchised if we wanted. Do you want to do that? I kind of don't feel like being an angry person today.
What do you mean?
What do you think I mean? I mean, if we keep talking, we're going to start remembering all the things we hate and all the things that are fucked up and wrong and sad and corrupt, and then we'll just be angry people.
I live with that every day. I'm in the media.
Yeah, most people do live with it every day, but we try to forget, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, I do newspaper and news and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to the voice says. I think you missed over that, or you glossed over that point. That's a huge thing throughout the book as well, isn't it?
Yeah. That's another one of the text boxes that is thematic throughout. And I got some serious Charlie's Angels vibes from that. Did you feel like you were Charlie's Angels?
No. But I see why you would think that, though. I like that connection.
Hello, angels. I'm going to tell you a thing to do, and you're going to do it. With guns.
So.
I wonder if that means the Brotherhood is angels.
Yes. I think that does.
Yeah?
I think it is.
There's a really interesting theological component to this without ever actually stating this is about religion.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, don't you think the voice is sort of a God allegory?
I could see it that way.
And the snipers shooting from on high? I guess I thought that there was a lot of religious components. I mean, they do worship the hand. They call themselves, not the hand, sorry, the voice. They call themselves the Brotherhood. It's a cult. It's very much explicitly stated as a type of religion. But I think it even goes deeper than that.
I think you're right. I like that. I hadn't thought about it, but you're right.
Awesome. I made you think about a thing.
So. Well, very good. No, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Thank you for turning me on to this one.
Oh, you're welcome. I knew you were going to love it. Because I know you. Hmm. I think that's actually about it. All the things I have to say. I obviously have a million more things I could say, but we should probably wrap up. Let's end by, what are you reading right now?
Oh, we don't want the third song?
Oh, my gosh, I totally forgot.
Well, it was going to be from some of our hometown boys, Haller.
Oh, yeah. So we're from Minneapolis area, and I'm really excited about this, so let's play the song.
It's In the Red, or no, World of Joy from Haller. Just for fun. That was Haller with World of Joy.
And again, I'm sorry that I forgot that there was another song. It's not about you, it's about me being dumb, and I love you.
I'm sure they'll forgive you with such a sincere...
I hope so.
...repentance.
Thanks. So, as we wrap up tonight, today, it's sort of evening-ish, let's finish off with what are you reading right now?
I have gone back. Well, I'm reading Sex Criminals, and I've gone back and started reading Witchblade.
Cool.
Which I never really got into for the most part, but.
What made you go back?
I don't know. I just saw a lot of the stuff. I mean, it's still out, and they're still doing a lot of stuff with all the Witchblade characters, like the Darkness and Artifacts and all that stuff. And I picked up one of the recent issues, and it looked good. So I was like, I should go back and get the backstory.
Yeah. I'm currently reading... what's the one that I read today? Lock and Key. I'm going back and reading all of the collections of Lock and Key.
I like Lock and Key.
Well, somehow I was a bad person and didn't ever actually pick it up previously, even though everybody I know had been recommending it to me. So I'm enjoying reading that through. And also Superman Red Sun. I love Kami Superman. You don't have to. I can.
What up?
I can do that all by myself.
I'm just not a fan of Superman. I like what it does to him. Instead of having the American morals of helping everybody, you have to... How does he deal with helping everybody because he has to in the communist morals?
Alternate histories. Very interesting. And I think that fighting for the worker is a really compelling concept.
It is, but it's interesting that I like the idea because he does it because he has to, because it's the communist
the
communist way. He was raised in the communist ideology.
Well, he does American things because he has to, because he was raised in the American ideology. That's
but
the whole
point. But he
chooses
to help him rather than taking the...
We're not talking about Superman.
Rather than taking
the
capitalist stance and doing it for yourself and making yourself bigger on the backs of smaller people because you can, he's following the communist idea of helping people because that's what's best for the collective.
But he's not being forced. I don't know why you said he was being forced.
I didn't mean he was being forced.
Okay. The other thing I'm reading is pretty deadly, and by the time this episode goes on air, I will have the final one that's coming out this April 2nd. So, whenever we put this episode up, nobody try and talk to me. I'm probably reading pretty deadly.
No tweeting until April 3rd.
Right. Oh, but do remember to tweet about Hulk Hogan at me. Pickles for nipples. Don't forget.
At Hulk Hogan. Mm-hmm. You probably don't want to agree with that.
Oh, and the God is Dead trade paperback is coming out June 10th, and the Secret trade paperback is coming out April 30th, and we're really looking forward to
that. We are indeed.
So, thank you. Bye.